on digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch.tv, and Facebook.
The Sportscast. Expect the unexpected.
The update presented by The Sportscast.
The Sportscast, June 24th, 2024. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, X, and Apple Podcast. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online digital radio. Visit our website, thesportscast.net. Also, follow us on X and Instagram at thesportscast1. And check out our app, The Sportscast for iOS. USA beats Bolivia 2-0. Germany ties Switzerland 1-1, and join us all the way up north. Hal Phillips, welcome back to the Sportscast.
Thanks for having me, Santi. Always a pleasure.
Hal, it's officially started. Two tournaments, two soccer tournaments. It's almost a World Cup.
Yeah. basically, all the good teams in the world are playing in these two tournaments. That's fair to say. Who's good that's not playing? Japan? South Korea? Maybe some African countries have a shot at winning.
Senegal, Egypt?
Senegal, yeah. But, you know, those teams have never won anything. They've never even gotten to anything but a semifinal of a World Cup. South Korea did that in 2002. Turkey is now, you know, part of UEFA. They played in a World Cup semifinal. So, yeah, they're not playing each other. It's not quite as good as a World Cup, but it's still pretty awesome.
Pretty awesome summer. Let's begin with the night, the game of the weekend, USA beating Bolivia 2-0. It was a goal, incredible game yesterday for the first Copa America opener for the U.S. men's national team. A goal by Christian Pulisic in the first half came in 3 minutes of the first half, under 3 minutes, and also a goal by Palerin Balogun a little bit later, right before halftime. What a match. I loved it. Hal, I want to hear your thoughts over this incredible opener.
The U.S. looked very good. But I think we have to remember that Bolivia is not good. They have not won an international, proper international match outside of Bolivia since the 2015 Copa America, 9 years ago. That's not good. You know, they want it home because they, you know, they play their home games at 12,000 feet, and it's very difficult to go there and play at sea level or close enough, as in Dallas, Texas. They're not a great side, and the U.S. pummeled them. They could have had 4 or 5 goals. And, in fact, I think they might rue the fact that they didn't rack up those goals, that they didn't take those chances when it comes to meeting out who wins this group. It's the difference between playing the winner of another group or the second-place team. Unfortunately for the U.S., I believe that either they win the group and play Colombia, say, as a second-place finisher, or they lose the group and play Brazil. So it's a tough draw for the U.S., no doubt.
Yes, the U.S. had a dominant match over this Bolivian side, which I think they're ranked, I think they're lowest ranked in the CONMEBOL at least. So the U.S. had 20 shots on goal. Bolivia had 6 shots on goal. The U.S. had a 61% possession rate to Bolivia's 39. But overall, the performance was good. As Hal mentioned, we could have got, you know, 2-3 more goals. Ricardo Pepi missed a few openers. He could have scored 2 goals.
He could have scored the moment he came on the field. And I'm sure he still can't believe that he missed it. But overall, this was a really solid performance against a South American side that, if it was in CONCACAF, it would be, you know, battling Costa Rica and Panama for those spots available to, say, the second-tier teams. They're not that bad, but they're not great by CONMEBOL standards at all. It was a good warm-up match. What we saw was the U.S. In full flight, and that's a fun thing to watch with this group of guys. We got, you know, Reyna playing behind Pulisic and Tim Weah and Ballo, Mr. Florian. Help me with that one.
Florian Balogun.
Balogun. I've just been calling him Balo. It's so much easier, and I like that name. It's like,
I agree.
Yeah. They all looked good. Balo didn't look great, honestly. He looked a little wooden and a little out of sync with his teammates, but the structure of this attack has become more and more obvious. Reyna is listed there on the right, but he really plays centrally behind those three attackers, and they pretty much go it alone. You get support from McKennie and Adams. You get support from especially Robinson coming up the left side. Scally plays pretty much at home on the right. But this is how the best U.S. 11 should be playing. And what's really interesting to me is you have a chance to bring someone like Pepe off the bench. He's a different kind of striker than Balo. You get a chance to bring someone like Aronson off the bench. He started a lot of games for us in the past. We have more depth. Reyna is that depth, honestly. We can bring someone like Johnny Cardoso in for someone like McKennie, so they can play two defensive midfielders on top of our two center backs with a little more versatility. I love Anthony Robinson going forward, and he doesn't seem to pay a price for it. We're missing deaths. That's really the only piece we're not seeing with this team, and they all looked like they worked well in sync against Bolivia.
Adams only played for one half of 45 minutes. I think he's just limited to that. I think he had a great first half. That midfielder that we really needed. Too bad that he's limited, but maybe down the road he can. But how much of a difference did Adams make in this match, you think?
A lot. And he's one of those rare defensive mids who not only is a destroyer and runs all day and hounds everything that's happening on top of the two center backs, he really wants the ball. In the same way that N'Golo Kanté for France wants the ball, and Claude Makélélé, another Frenchman, about 5'5 in stature and tremendous work rate, wanted the ball at his feet. Adams is very comfortable, and he's always offering himself to a winger who is trapped against the sideline as an outlet. And if he comes to the ball and any defender moves to him, well, then Reyna, a little bit further up the field, is even more available. It makes a huge difference that those players want the ball, will take it with their back to play, will try to turn, will make a smart, simple pass from there. It's something, actually, that the English national team cannot do. And as an important match goes further and further along, you see that they are more and more afraid to do what Tyler Adams does routinely.
Which we'll get to England a little bit later in the show, but I will have to give credit to Christian Pulisic. He really turned up. Yeah. He did a lot. He did a lot of running. I noticed that. He played the whole match, which I usually see him getting out early. But he had a tremendous game. I think it felt like Christian took the weight on his shoulders a bit for this match. It felt like they had to come back strong. He had to come on strong for the team. But he was very captain-like, he had a huge leadership role for yesterday's match, I thought.
Yeah, I don't want to be too squishy about it. He took the load off everyone else's shoulders by scoring 3 minutes into the game. And that changed the way this team played in terms of its freedom. They were no longer, if they had gone 30 minutes without scoring against a team this week, there would have been some squeaky bumps, and there would have been a little bit of pressure, anxiety, what have you. He took all that away, and that's what good players do. And he's to be applauded for it. We just take him for granted now. He's so skilled. He's so good in possession, and he'll run at people. I wish Tim Weah would run at people in the same way on the other side of the field, because he's got a speed advantage on so many people. It put them under pressure. Even if it doesn't work, they know you're going to try it. They're going to defend you differently. Yunus Musah, who you have pictured there, you know, this guy is a world-class midfielder, plays for AC Milan.
He should be starting.
Yeah, well, that's another indication that this is unlike any U.S. team we've ever seen. There's no way a player of Musa's quality isn't in every starting 11. In this team, he's got to battle McKennie, Reyna, and Adams for a spot. What is he better? The only guy that I think he could probably supplant is McKennie, and he's really sort of a talisman. He'd be the captain of this team if Pulisic wasn't wearing the armband. Johnny Cardoso, another defensive midfielder of great quality, plays for Real Betis. That's five midfielders. I think we'll call, and maybe from previous podcasts, during Qatar 2022, who was our first midfielder off the bench? Kellen Acosta.
Yes.
This is a massive upgrade. This is why the U.S. is knocking on the door of world ranking sort of legitimacy and credibility, but they have to prove it on the field, and that's what the tournaments like this are for.
Yes, a lot of a whole lot of confidence from this match, and hopefully we got a picture of Lexi Lawless, a fan. I thought it was the most brilliant outfit It's very I've seen from a fan base, I thought. A lot of credit there. The jersey, everything.
Yes, I just read a brilliant story in The Athletic from Pablo Moore about the 1995 Copa America that the U.S. went to in Paysandú, Uruguay. And full flight, full red on hairband, Alexi Lalas in those pictures. And a great story, if you guys don't mind a plug. It's that was probably the best Copa, well, definitely the best Copa experience we've ever experienced here in the U.S., and an underrated sort of chapter in U.S. history, 94, 95. Things were just emerging, and they went and got to the final, the semifinals, that tournament.
I know, and we lost against Brazil. I looked that up this morning, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I knew about it because I mentioned it in Generation Zero, my book from 2022. And I think I talked about it mostly because a guy named John Kerr Jr., that was his final appearance for the U.S. national team after sort of being – you know, in the mix since about 1984. He's a contemporary of mine. We played against each other as youth players, but that was a huge tournament. We beat Argentina basically to kick them into second place in the group, and they had to play Brazil next and went out. We also beat Mexico in that game. And I'm writing about the U.S.-Mexico rivalry right now. And that was a huge game. Why? Because in the comments from the Mexican players, you can already hear that they are way ahead of their fans and their federation and saying, you know, these guys are pretty good. Stop talking about how we should be killing them every time we play them. We were almost equal to the Mexicans in 1995. The players saw it, but the rest of Mexican soccer culture did not. So, yeah, very interesting time in American soccer history.
I remember that. We've been in penalties. Back then, you had to watch it on pay-per-view.
I did not see it. I did not. I did not see it live, and I remember hearing about it and being really mad that no one was televising it. Yes, you're right. Pay-per-view. That's all that was available. We've come a long way, baby.
I know. Isn't it incredible? Closed circuit television. I had to go to bars and restaurants to watch some of these matches. Crazy.
What kind of restaurants? Colombian restaurants.
Exactly. Restaurants. You pay $50 at the door, then you have to order food on top of that. So you couldn't.
I used to have a network all over Greater Boston where I lived, where I would go to watch games like that. But this was after I had moved to Maine. And you know what? Not very many Colombian restaurants in Maine, Santi. Sad.
I bet not. The other group match that came on, Uruguay beating Panama 3-1, which the U.S. will play on Thursday. Goals by Uruguayan Arujo, Nunez, and Vina, and Panama goal by Murillo at the 94th minute. Uruguay is stretching their muscles. How they got more goals than we do, but your thoughts over this match. If you saw it, I saw a little bit of it. So
I saw the whole thing, and in fact, I would say I paid more attention to it because I was really interested to see both teams that the U.S. will play next. And we had some friends over to watch the U.S. game, and the power went out in the middle of it, and we had food, and it came back on, but everyone was gone by the time I watched Uruguay, Panama. And, you know, Panama's a tough team to play against. They really work hard. They're very physical. They have just enough skill to make you worry, but Uruguay was clearly the superior team. And watching them play under this new system from Bielsa, the Argentinian, was really fascinating. Nunez there, who's pictured, is just completely unlocked and set free under the system. He was running rampant. They, too, could have scored many more goals than three. And right now they are leading the group technically, because I believe that if it's the same as the Euros, you know, it's points that is deciding the first deciding factor. Then it's goal differential. And right now the U.S. has a goal differential of two, and so do the Uruguayans. But the third one is total goals. And we'll get to this maybe when we talk about the Euro. That is what it goes. So that would give Uruguay the lead in this group right now. So good little primer for later. It's going to be a really fascinating game. I mean, the game that Uruguay played against Panama is similar to the ones that we play against Panama. Usually we dominate possession with them. They're happy to give us the ball. They're very difficult to break down. And you have to be pinpoint accurate in front of goal to put them under pressure, to make them come out of their shell and have to score. The longer the game goes 0-0, the better they get. But Uruguay scored plenty here to put Panama under plenty of pressure and break them down. And but Uruguay didn't look like a world-beating team. They looked like a team that could be had. It's going to be fascinating to watch that game. That's not until next week. Maybe a week, Sunday or Monday. I can't remember
it's Monday, 9 p.m. at Arrowhead Stadium.
Oh, great. I'll be back. I've got some travels. They play Panama on Thursday. So that'll be the schedule for the U.S. in this opening group fixture list.
Well, you saw yesterday from Panama. How do you think we'll beat them easily, or what are your thoughts for this match on Thursday?
No, I don't think anyone beats Panama easily anymore. They're just physically very, very difficult to play against. They have two excellent center backs, Cordoba and this young dude, number 24. I can't remember his name offhand. He's lanky, but really good. He looks like he's about 19, and he's getting better and better and better. Right at the middle of the field, they're quite good, and they have just enough skill to put the ball away if you give them enough chances. They don't really play on the counter that well. That is the one thing they could develop and really be a dangerous side, because they absorbed a lot of pressure from Uruguay, but never threatened them on a quick break. But you know, they were only down 1-0 in this game for about 75 minutes. The second goal really opened things up, and Uruguay scored again, but so did Panama. But it's going to be a very difficult game for the U.S. People will recall that the U.S. lost the semifinal of the Gold Cup to Panama last summer. So
I remember that match.
Very capable. We didn't have our first team at that tournament.
We had Jesus Ferreira.
Yep, exactly. That was in the Jesus Ferreira era. The Ferreira era. But don't look past them. I'm sure that Berhalter has said this to a team. They must know it. They've got to really come out flying and put that team under the cosh like Pulisic did against Bolivia. That game was over very early because of that one happening 3 minutes in. They don't have to do that to beat Panama, but the earlier they score, the better.
The better. There you go. Thursday is the game against Panama, live in Atlanta, 6 p.m. Eastern in Atlanta. Of course, that field was criticized by the Argentinians. Everyone's talking about the fields. It was good last night up in the Cowboy Stadium, but it is a talk in the whole Twitterverse, I guess, at least.
I feel bad. Edson Alvarez is a really important player for Mexico, and he's lost for this tournament. He did a hamstring. They're blaming it on the field. Not sure that's warranted. The field in Dallas looked as striated and dodgy as the Atlanta field did, but I guess the field surface itself didn't come up as easily in Dallas as it did in Atlanta. This happens in Germany, you know, one of the cradles of European football, the game that the English played against their last game. Against Denmark. That field was terrible. It was coming up in sheets from the very beginning, and it did affect the game. Did it affect one team more than the other? That's not for me to say, but that's a terrible example of tournament organization that they allowed that game to be played on that field. Like, they had a bunch of fields in Germany where something could be done. I'm sort of mystified that in good weather, that was more of an offense to me. What did Twitter have to say about that, Santi? Anything?
No, nothing yet. We'll find
out.
Can't
count on Twitter.
You can't count on Twitter. We'll see what happens with the field situation. And as Hal said, Edson Alvarez is out for the tournament. He's the captain. Some say he's the future of Mexico. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of days. All right, now let's go into the Euros. Yesterday, Germany tied Switzerland 1-1. Goals by the Swiss was first, and then the draw happened from striker Nicholas Füllkrug at stoppage time. It was an exciting match. It felt like Germany had to win it or tie it, but they win the group.
They win the group, and because they won the group, I believe they get the winner of probably Italy and Croatia as opposed to Spain. That's what the stakes are in winning these groups. Switzerland, had they held on for that victory, that 1-0 victory, they would have avoided Spain. Now I think they're playing Spain in the next round, although just how the third-place finishers are going to be sifted into this grid, I don't have committed to memory. But, you know, this is the way group play is conducted. And you have to take care of your business, and you have to finish your chances when you get them. And, of course, the games are played simultaneously so that there's no dodgy business or no playing too openly for a result, you know, between the four teams that are contesting those final group matches. I watched mostly the Hungary-Scotland match that was contested simultaneously. That felt to me more meaningful because Hungary and Scotland, the winner there, was going to probably advance to the round of 16 with 4 points, a one win, one loss, one tie performance, which is usually enough to get you through in a tournament of 24 teams and 16, you know, places in a knockout round. But that game was so terrible to watch, Scotland and Hungary. It was absolutely devoid of skill, technical skill, and there was a near death. You know, some fellow got brained, and a poor Hungarian player laid there convulsing. That was unsettling, and Scotland offered absolutely nothing. Hungary came back and scored in injury time, and they may go through, but I haven't seen that meted out.
Yeah, so here is what's left in the third best place teams. Remember, one is Austria, two Slovakia, three Hungary, and four Slovenia. All this can change within a day. But how you do have the scenarios of the Euros. What do you have in your notes?
Well, the important thing to remember is that once points is, if that's tied, you go to goal difference and then goal scored. And there's a couple other obscure topics that, you know, that are taken into account. Ultimately, if there's a tie, and there may well be a tie because we're going to have three or four teams with 1-1-1 record, the team with the highest UEFA playoff ranking goes through. Now, what does that mean? That means that if you won your qualifying group or achieved more points in your qualifying group, or your group featured better competition and your wins counted for more in that group, your ranking from the playoff that was just completed counts, you know, is the final decider, because that can't be drawn. And for example, Hungary had a coefficient of like 40, and Scotland had a coefficient of like 55. So if those team ended up, you know, tied on goals, goal differential, points, everything, then it goes down to this UEFA ranking. And that's probably a good way to do it for the tournament, because we want the better teams to go through. And 1-1-1, there's going to be a lot of 1-1-1 teams at the end of this tournament, in my view, because just the way the whole bracket is set up, there's going to be some crazy final day action. And even though it was not compelling, we got that from Group A yesterday with Germany, Switzerland, and Hungary, and Scotland.
As I said before, Germany won Group A, number two, Switzerland, three, Hungary. Hungary is still in the running to get into the knockout round. They got Group B with Spain, Italy, Albania. Spain is definitely, I think they're going to win the group. Obviously, they have one more match. And Group C, England, they have a match today against Slovenia. So we'll see what happens, how things are laid out. But they're first place. And Denmark is number two, three, Slovenia. Group D, Netherlands is up against France only by goal difference, as Hal said. Austria's third, fourth, Poland. Group E, Romania, number one. Belgium, number two. Three, Slovakia. Fourth, Ukraine. Romania's looking good. Belgium came back this past weekend with their win versus Romania. And then Group F, Portugal, having a good tournament so far. First place in Group F, then Turkey. Now they call it Turkey or Turkey. I've been hearing different pronunciations. Then Czechia at third, fourth, Georgia. And then third place teams, Austria, Slovakia, Hungary, Slovenia, being in Czechia. What are your thoughts over these groups so far? Obviously, things can change in a second.
Anything can happen, but here's some fun scenarios for you. Because Spain in Group B has already clinched first place in this group, pretty much on goal difference, if anything was tied, the big game is Italy against Croatia. The winner of that game will probably finish second, will almost certainly finish second. And that means that one of those teams, both of whom are really good, Italy is the defending European, you know, championships title holder, and Croatia, you know, was in the final of the World Cup in 2018. These are very good teams. One of those teams will be dropped into that third place slot. Actually, Albania can also get in there and challenge for a third place slot. They have 1 point, but they play Spain. And suppose Spain runs out a second team and Albania gets a result there. There'll be 1-1-1. We could potentially get three teams with a 1-1-1 record in that group alone. In Group C, we have sort of the same, you know, situation. Denmark is in the driver's seat. If they can win, if they beat Serbia, they're in. But and England is likely to beat Slovenia, or even if they get a draw, they'll be in. Although they
which could happen. Group.
Sorry?
Which could happen.
It's good. Yes. I mean, Serbia. Well, yeah, England-Slovenia is going to be a good game. England has looked bad. Slovenia has not been beaten. They've drawn twice. But on the other side of that draw, Denmark and Serbia are playing. If Denmark wins, they may win the group with 5 points. Two draws, they're unbeaten. If they lose, they could go home with only 2 points, because one loss, no wins, and two draws will not get you a third place slot. This is where the beauty of the group play comes into practice. everyone has an incentive to go for it. Almost always. Very few of these teams are going to be saying, well, if we can just get a draw here, we'll be fine. That is very, very difficult to do unless you're 2-0 unbeaten so far with 6 points. So England and Slovenia should be a fascinating match, if only because the pressure on England is enormous as usual. The other match I would point out to people is Austria and the Netherlands. France is one win and one draw. Netherlands, one win and one draw. They're clearly the class of this group. But wait, Austria has looked really, really good. They played very well against France in losing, and they destroyed Poland. And they're playing the Netherlands for all the marbles, basically. Same situation as Serbia and Denmark. The winner goes through as a second-place finisher. France is almost certainly going to beat Poland, who is eliminated. So the Netherlands and Austria going to be a great match. I think that's Wednesday or Thursday. I can't keep track. But
yeah, it's around that time.
To look for as well.
Yeah.
Well, one more. Group E is just completely up for grabs. Romania, Belgium, Slovakia, Ukraine. Each team is 1-1. So
that's exciting.
Anything can happen there. Those teams are going to have an obligation to go for it, to score goals. It's going to be open. And I can't wait.
I cannot wait. These Euros are pretty exciting. As I told Hal before the show, this reminds me of the 1994 World Cup and 1990 World Cup, where the third place teams come into play.
Yeah.
So it's this format, I like it because everyone has something to lick on, you know. So
the only alternative is that you invite more teams to the tournament. If you have 32 teams, then you have a nice round number. You have 8 groups of 4, and the top 2 teams go, and that's quite cut and dried. But who would those 8 teams be? They would dilute the quality of the field. 100%. So every single one of these teams is pretty darn good. I would say the worst team I've seen so far has been Poland, and they're not terrible. They were in both games. It was interesting to see Lewandowski come off the bench. They started, he brought him on at one. That team tied the game up. Poland did 1-1 with about 30 minutes left. They bring Lewandowski off the bench. I'm like, wow, Poland played this just right. Now they can maybe win this match. Nope. Austria destroyed them in that half an hour. They scored 2 goals, could add a couple more. Watch out for Austria. They're pretty darn good.
Austria's pretty good. Well, there you have it. Euros continue today. Let's go into predictions, Hal. Who do you have? England versus Slovenia?
I think England will get its act together in that. And I think that Serbia may beat Denmark. So I think it'll be England and Serbia. I think Serbia will be the third place group, the third place winner in that group, and Denmark may slide in if they can get a draw. But I think England and Serbia are favorite to me because I think Serbia can score goals, and I haven't seen that Denmark can do that.
France versus Poland.
They're going to kill Poland. The game is there. I'm going to say Austria and the Netherlands tie.
All right, tie there, Netherlands, Austria, and then tonight, who do you have between? Hold on. Let's scroll this down. Wait.
I'm sorry. Who do I have tonight?
Hold on. I'm trying to look at the Copa America here. Colombia versus Paraguay.
Oh, well, I'm taking Colombia because my co-host is Colombian, and I want Colombia to go through because I think they can win the whole thing.
They could win it. They are contenders. I think they're like third, fourth favorite to win the Copa America. Yep. And then Brazil versus Costa Rica.
Oh, God, I hope the Costa Ricans play well. Everyone's sort of crapping on Brazil, saying they're not as good as they used to be. They're probably tired of hearing that, and the Costa Ricans are probably going to pay the price.
There you have it. A lot of Copa America action, Euro action. Pretty excited for these tournaments happening. Euros I'm pretty excited about. Mm-hmm. Before we go, Hal, what is the best way to reach you online to talk to you about? Are you going to watch every tournament match from now on?
I'm going to Scotland on Tuesday, so I'm going to be watching it on European time. I'll be back on the 30th, but you can reach me at that URL right there. That's the companion site for my book, Generation Zero. You can get me at the genzero.halphillips. That's my handle on Threads and Instagram.
There you have it. You can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1 on X or IG. We'll be live tweeting throughout the week. Looking forward to it. And finally, Game 7, Edmonton Oilers at the Florida Panthers. Who wins it all for the Marbles?
I'm picking the Oilers because I believe Edmonton has solved Mr. Bobrovsky. You know, that game that they lost in Game 4, Edmonton down 3-0, destroys the Panthers 8-1 at home. Everyone said, oh, well, that was a game that Florida didn't have to win. That's true. But they hadn't been able to touch Bobrovsky. They scored 5 goals on him, and he has not been the same since. He's not been terrible, but the Oilers have the best offensive team in the league, and they've looked plenty potent in the last 3 games. And now the pressure's squarely on the Panthers, hoping not to blow a 3-0 lead in a Stanley Cup final. What are they saying in Florida, Santi?
They're not having much optimism. How I talked to a few of my friends that have tickets,
yeah,
and I don't know. They have no optimism. They have no hope for some reason. So I do. I think they could pull it off tonight, but that momentum is a strong, strong poison.
Well, I think more concretely, you got to have a hot goalie, and Bobrovsky is no longer the hot goalie in the series, and it doesn't look good for me. But it can also change on a dime. We'll see. It should be a great spectacle. I hope there's an early goal, because that opens up these game sevens, who can be very, very cagey affairs if there's no score. So let's hope for an early goal, and may the best team win.
There you go. That's the right word, cagey. Anyways, thanks a lot, Hal. And this was your update.